your aunt's name, actually?
Anna Woodall.
Oh, yes.
Yes, well, I mean, she was baptised Eliza. But she became, she adopted the name Ella. So that her career started when, living in this little country village near Stockport in Cheshire, she decided she wasn't going to be a milliner's assistant. That wasn't going to be good enough for her. And she, which was either that or service, you see, to poor people. And she decided she'd be a nurse. So she got some, she went to, I think she went to London Hospital and had several years training as a nurse. And then became a school nurse in Chester, which was at that time very enterprising. We had for years a photograph of her on a motorbike, which was quite extraordinary, you see, at that time.
She drove it herself.
And she drove it there, yes, but I've lost it, unfortunately. But there she was in her little little cap with ribbons and other sort of dated cape. Very sweet. But anyway...
So your mother was her sister then?
Yes. My mother was, she took up health visiting when her marriage broke up. She had been a student teacher. They were both quite bright, actually. Out of 11 children, this is just by the way.
Yes, very relevant, yes.
From out of 11 children that my grandmother had, only four reached adult.
Tell me a bit about your grandmother and your grandfather. I mean, what was their background then?
Well, my grandfather was a gardener, and my grandmother was the daughter of a butcher. So my grandmother was slightly superior to my grandfather, you see. And anyway, and she didn't marry her. I think she must have been about 27 or 28 before she married.
Because Amy.
My grandmother.
Oh, your grandmother.
Because my grandfather was earning very little money, and so he had to save up money, which in those days was absolutely essential before you could marry, and so it took him some time.
So how do you explain then the fact your mother and your aunt did so well?
Well, I don't know. My grandfather was rather a dour, rather pig-headed, conventional type of person. He was quite nice, but it was my grandmother who was the vital spark. She was quite scatty, and anyway, she had this brood of children, and it seemed of these four who reached adulthood. The two boys never did anything. They seemed to be rather
adventurous,
yes, and ineffectual. Mm-hmm. But the two girls, right from the word go, were definitely going to get out of their environment. And I think it must have been my aunt, who was 8 years older than my mother, so she had to do a lot of mothering to the younger children.
I see, yes.
But she was the live wire, I think she inspired my mother to get out of their really poor background.
So they both became early socialists, what, in the 1900s?
Well, yes, and I think my father was too. They used to take the free thinker.
Did they really?
Oh, yes. Yes, and I suppose, about in the 1900s. And I don't know how they got into socialism, but they certainly did. And all these, they must have got into some little group. I suppose they moved from, they lived near Stockport in Cheshire, and then eventually I don't know whether they lived in Manchester, but then they lived in Liverpool.
They being your grandparents, you mean?
No, not my grandparents. Oh, well, I think my grandparents, yes, went
yes.
to.
Yes, I see.
But my mother was really particularly bright. She was really more intelligent than my aunt, but my aunt had all the push.
I see, yes, yes. So your mother moved as well, did she, out of, away from the home background? I mean, where did she move to then?
My mother, I suppose I was about three, the marriage broke up, and my mother, at my aunt's suggestion, didn't go in for teaching. She'd been a student, you know, in school at that time.
Yes,
favoured pupils were kept on to help with the teaching. Mm-hmm. And she did this. And then for a time she was a governess to a family. But then after her marriage, and then when that broke up, my aunt said, instead of going in for teaching properly, why don't you think about becoming a nurse or a health visitor? You see, it was just beginning, health visiting.
That's right, it would be.
Just beginning. And in fact, my mother really was one of the pioneers in it. I can't remember all the details, you know, about it. But then she moved round. They were both really ambitious. And they were determined to get out of their groove and to rise both intellectually and socially.
Yes.
And I suppose a lot of other people of that generation were fired with the same.
And that goes with socialist views very often, doesn't it? People who are shaking off their background.
Yes.
But
of course, this was very different from Anna, who came. She must have come from a very respected middle class.
She came down from Scotland, of course, from a Presbyterian sort of background, early Scottish middle class Presbyterian.
And that's another interesting thing, you see, both my mother and aunt, who had been brought up, I think it was church, they went to church all their childhood, you know, three times a day on Sunday, and very, very religious, and never do any work on Sunday. But how early they reacted against this. So that going along with their socialism, beginning of the 1900s, they were also atheists or agnostics.
Mm. And taking, if you say, the free thinker in the house.
Yes, well, my father, because I heard my mother say that he took the free thinker. Yes.
Anyway, you've got your aunt in Chester then,
yes.
And your mother.
Well,
I don't. As a health visitor.
Yes, well, we went to Lancaster.
Yes. How then do they make contact with Anna Munro?
Anna Munro used to come to Chester with other speakers to speak and publicise the ideas of Vote for Women, women's suffrage. And my aunt must have gone to the meetings in Chester and offered hospitality to any of them who were going to stay the night, and she'd give tea parties for them. Oh, she said that they had quite a little social life all centering round that little cottage.
I see, yes. And so she got to know her as a guest, really.
First of all, and she also, but this was my aunt, not my mother.
Yes, yes.
She also got to know many of the other people who came. But they weren't the militant section,
no.
Were they?
Well, Women's Freedom League was sort of halfway between the non-militants and militants, really. It was the intermediate sort of thing.
Yes.
But Anna herself wasn't militant, really. Not in any, not burning buildings or anything like that.
No.
So is it your aunt then who brings your mother to get to know Anna Munro?
Yes. Well, there's a very close association between my mother and aunt all their lives. And when the First World War broke out, my aunt went to France as a nurse. And when she came back, a job together in Lincolnshire, but I think when my aunt came back from the war, she took a job in Woolwich Arsenal, where they where the women were making munitions.
Oh, yes.
That was another little bit. But by which time, my mother had taken a job as a health visitor connected with Woolwich Borough Council. Mm-hmm. And we'd lived in Louth at that before. And we came up to London with my grandparents and settled in Eltham, South East London, which was all part of Woolwich Borough Council. So my aunt came and lived with us, and she was working as a supervisor under Miss Lillian Barker, of whom you've probably heard, and she's dead now, but she was the first woman open, woman commissioner of the first woman's prison, wasn't she, open prison?
Yes, yeah, so she were.
Yes, I remember going there, actually. She invited, my aunt got quite friendly with her, and I remember going to see this prison. Anyway, so my mother and aunt were together there, you see, and I think it was after that that we contacted Anna again, I suppose, during the First World War. Well, I don't know, I was just a child, so I can't remember. But...
she had a flat in London at one time, Anna Monroe.
Oh, did she?
But she may have been in Reading by that time, I'm not quite sure.
Yes. Anyway, by 1927, she was coming to stay with us, you see, because we had this country cottage, and they came down for a short holiday.
Yes.
And then over the next few years, periodically, we went to see her.
So what your aunt and your mother had in common with her was really woman's rights originally, but
yes,
they just got to like each other.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
So it became a personal thing.
Yes.
And in fact, later, in 1950, I'd seen her before several times. We'd been to the wedding, I went to... Mrs. Despard's 90th birthday celebration. You've heard about that.
I'd like you to tell me about it.
I can't remember much. But anyway, later, in 1952, I went to live at Farnham in Surrey.
Oh, yes.
And with my son, Francis, and we lived there, and I taught at Frensham Heights School for many years, and he was a pupil there, actually. Well, that wasn't all that far from Aldermaston, so occasionally we used to go over to see Anna at Aldermaston, and two or three times she came over to see me, because she and I sort of clicked, really. I was very, very, I must say that all through my childhood, Anna Monroe was a magic name to me, and she was a magic person. She, there was something absolutely irresistible about her to me, and I think to many people. Of course, a family gets so used to a person that they don't see possibly the objective charm so much, but it's subjective. Whereas friends
can be a country person,
and she was really the most, to me anyway, fascinating person.
Was she wise? Is it her name?
Well, she above anything else, and of course, as she got older, she became, I suppose, rather, she must have been very difficult, I think, when she got older. But she spoke beautifully. She had a fascinating way of talking. I don't think she could say her THs. And she had, I suppose it was slightly Scottish, I don't know. I can't remember. But there was a, she had an absolutely charming way of talking, and she was a very, very unusual person, and she was, original and eccentric a bit, you see.
Good with children, do you think? I mean, did she understand how children think?
I haven't a clue. What was she, as a magistrate, was it of children?
Not particularly. No, I just really wonder, because you presumably knew her as a child, I wonder whether you just feel in retrospect that she just was good with children.
Yes. Yes. Well, I can't remember seeing her much as a child, really, because I must have done, but occasionally. But I can't remember. You see, during the war, that would rather crowd the First World War. That would 4 years of.
Yes.
That would rather.
Her son, you see, used the word sweet about her. She was a sweet woman.
She was.
Somehow. And she was just very good at controlling meetings because she was so obviously such a nice person. You'd agree with
oh,
that?
Well, oh, absolutely. In fact, one of the stories that we always heard and we used to have a little laugh about was that if they had very truculent people in an audience, and there was a lot of heckling going on and so on and so forth, that the organiser would say, oh, put little Anna up, you see, put Anna on the platform and she'll calm them down. And she did, I gather, because she had, there was something rather special about her personality, there was no doubt about
it. So she really stuck in your memory as being a sort of special person?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, definitely. I didn't see her so often right at the end. She got fat and I would think rather perhaps a bit confused and
Yes.
She was the same age as my mother actually. And so younger than my aunt.
So what do you think your mother and aunt had in common? What did they like about her? What was the bond between them, really, as a person?
As a person?
Mm. Sense of humour or political
interest? Yes, she had that, and political interests. Yes, I suppose it did become a more friendly relationship later. Though my aunt was always very political. So she would always be interested in all the political talk that went on, and talk about the suffragettes and what they were doing at a later period, you see. And Anna would be full of talk about them because she kept in touch with all these people, whereas my aunt didn't. And although she was still interested, she didn't really keep in touch so much. There were tales, too, about when Sydney, you probably heard, how Sydney was very pro-women's suffrage, her husband. But I don't know whether this was before they were married, probably was, but on one occasion when she was going to be arrested, he tried to get arrested, too, by the police. I don't know whether Anne actually went to prison. She,
yes, she did.
She did. Well, perhaps it was on that occasion or other occasions. I don't know how often. But Sydney was very, very keen and tried to get himself arrested as well.
Because the women's suffrage group brought them together, actually, because he saw her first. It was a meeting, didn't he?
Oh, did he? I didn't know. I forgot that.
Yes.
Oh, he was in the audience, perhaps he was one of the hecklers that was calmed down by her, or convinced by her. There's a lovely story that Anna used to tell. I expect you've heard this before. But he, by the way, had been a spoilt boy. He had three sisters, and Anna always used to say, oh, well, of course, Sydney... doesn't really understand women's rights, you know, because he'd always been so looked after as a boy. Anyway, when they were first married, she used to tell us a story about how they came in after being out for a walk or whatever, and he'd sit down in front of the fire and put his feet on the mantelpiece, and little Anna would get her chair and sit down next to him and put her feet on the my aunt immensely. He was so anti-men, you know. Quite right, too.
They got along well together, though. She's a very strong character, but he somehow wears it, doesn't he? And they seem to establish a rather good relationship.
Really. Yes.
What about the children then? I mean, how did she bring up her children? Was she very strict in discipline, do you think?
I have no idea.
You didn't really see them together.
I always got the feeling that, it was not so much of a feeling, it was a fact, because Anna would say, oh, well, Margaret's Sydney's adored one, you see. And it did seem as if Margaret could do no wrong, and I think Sydney spoiled Margaret tremendously. She was a very original little girl, you see.
Yes,
full of funny little sayings and so on, whereas Donald, as I said before, wasn't like that, but he was very much light and
charming.
Yes, they were very different. Oh, well, Margaret had a charm as well, but different, you know, more sort of intellectual in a way. One got the feeling that Anna really had a slight leaning towards Donald, but I don't know.
That would be natural.
That would be natural, yes. Yeah. Yes, I think I never knew quite whether she really approved of the first marriage, but she was going to go along with it, and if it was his choice.
You say.
Oh, terrific. Big do. I can't remember. I don't think it was Reading. Newbury is near, isn't it?
That's right.
Maybe Newbury, anyway. It was the reception was in a hall. It wasn't from her home. And there must have been a lot of people there. I can remember it as a long, very long room, hall, with a great many people and trestle tables and food. No, it was a...
How would that fit with the socialism then? I mean, you wouldn't think...
Oh, well, you see, it becomes a little tricky. It doesn't. I don't think for a minute Sydney was a socialist.
No, I see.
Or if he had been...
They weren't fervent anyway by that time, you think, or at least he wasn't. She was always a socialist throughout her life, wasn't she?
I would think so, yes. But then, of course, a lot of socialists, they can't help it if they get wealthy, can they? And I suppose that was just one of those things that that happened. I don't know what Sydney's background or training had been, but... obviously, he became a businessman, and perhaps this was an astonishment to both of them, as far as I know. At one period, they had two Daimlers, because Anna, I knew that Sydney had a Daimler, and then Anna turned up at my house in Farnham in a Daimler and said, oh, Sydney's given me for my birthday presents. Well, she was she was a terrible driver. And she always left it in first gear, you know, and so then when she started it, she was sort of leaning forward. And I can also remember her parking when she was, about the cars near, and she was having a hell of a time bumping into them. And she said, well, what a bumper's for, except to bump. But, you know, she was quite scatty over a lot of things.
You say she was actually, you'd say she was a little eccentric. In what way was she eccentric then, would you say, from what you saw?
Well, it's eccentric. Original is more the...
Like her daughter?
Yes, I suppose so. There's Sydney, Donald wasn't at all like Sydney. Curiously enough, in this, I can see Sydney in this, he looks very like Sydney there, but didn't develop. Oh yes, that reminds me of a very funny little thing. You see the little girl in a top coat?
Yes.
Must have been about was spring, but early spring, and jolly cold, and therefore she's in a top coat, but she's got no shoes and stockings on. And that was a little kink of Anna's. So you can say there's an example of eccentricity, because she said as a child she'd always wanted to run about without any shoes on, and she was never allowed to. So she swore that if ever she had any children, she'd let them run around as long as they wanted to without shoes and socks on. And Donald had done, I gathered, as a child, and Margaret did. And it was quite a funny spectacle too, because we went out with them into a town, and there would Margaret be paddling along, you see, with her little bare feet and this thick coat on, and everybody staring, you see, looking round and saying, what's this child doing with that? With obviously middle-class people.
It's very interesting, because the mark in Anna's childhood would have been, if you were poor, you wouldn't have two shoes.
Yes. Yes.
That's right. Age, isn't it?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yes. But what sort of, did she make, did she tell jokes, Anna? Did she have a good sense of humour, do you think?
Yes, I think she had a lovely sense of humour. I can't remember jokes, but anecdotes.
Yes. You told me one or two.
Well, I've told you one or two, which came from her, you see.
Yes, yes.
And so she'd say funny things about Sydney, you see. Or she'd say that about Donald. Well, it's the best thing he's brought home yet, you know. It's rather like the cat bringing home, you know.
Yes, sort of teasing, really,
yes,
in a way with
yes,
the relatives.
Yes, and I can't remember anything she said about Sydney, but it was all actually, yeah.
What sort of man was Sydney? So you met him, did you?
Yes, yes.
What was he like? You know, the shadowy figure, I
know. Well, it's quite difficult to describe. Well, he was thin, and as I would think, but perhaps it wasn't so, tallish, medium to tall, thin, fair, rather long face. Fair hair and blue eyes, I think. Anna had dark hair originally and brown eyes. So Donald had her colouring, and Margaret was more like her father, I suppose.
Quiet, was he? Any writing pencil?
Yes.
Yes.
And rather, I would think quite conservative in his work and in his attitudes and the way he liked to live. He liked a quiet life and come back in the evening and
So when they were together, it would be Anna who would be doing the talking, really, would it?
I would think so.
Yes.
Yes. I can't ever remember him. I can't remember ever anything that he ever said.
No, that's probably significant.
Yes.
But
I do remember one. I can't remember the words of the call, but he made a comment to me once. I was an art student. I don't know whether he'd asked me what I thought of boys, or I don't know what it was. I got the impression that he was perhaps a little bit fed up with feminism, and he thought perhaps I was quite a feminist, really, but I think he got the impression that I was the type of girl that would make the tea while enjoyed it, you know.
Yes. Did you ever go to the house, Mrs. Hooper?
Oh yes, several times. It was a lovely house, lovely long old farmhouse type house. And I remember one of their two sitting rooms, and then you went through and down some steps, and then they had a dining room and lots of dairies and kitchens and so on and so forth. And they had a most marvellous Chinese carpet in one of the rooms in one of the lounges. Absolutely.
That's an old master, is it?
An old master. Yes. That's the only wet place I ever remember.
Yes, I see.
Going. And they had outside a lovely garden and a tennis court. I remember that particularly because when I was at Farnham, my son, who came with me once or twice to see them, and he was very, very struck by this house, you see. He thought it was absolutely marvellous. And he played tennis. We played tennis on the tennis court, and this made a big impression on him. He also has some memory of, though I don't know whether it was at the same time as the Elder Master March, or whether it was talking about it afterwards to Anna, but he seems to remember her saying that she was most interested in the Elder Master March. He was at that age when he went, you see. I think he was about 14 when he first went on the Master March, and we must have discussed it with her, or else on the way to the start of the Old Master March, he went in to see her, or something. He can't remember, and I can't.
She would be interested, because I think she did go on a lot.
Did she?
Yes, I think so. She certainly was very interested anyway, so that would fit.
Yes.
So, in fact, it's a big house, with a rambling house,
old-fashioned house.
And well-kept, do you think?
Oh, yes, very well-kept.
Yes.
It was just by the railway, so you could always spot it. And when we went down to Cornwall, which we did for holidays, it was always, oh, let's look out for Anna's house, you see, from the railway between Reading and Newbury. I suppose Anna Munro was a bit of a special person to my son as well, through me, really, though he only met her a few times. But he always thought that she was.
What sort of a hostess was she? Did she make
lavish. Lavish. Yes, I'd forgotten that. Yes.
Well, lots of food.
Oh, lots of food, you see, and do have this, yes. I remember tomato soup and putting in cream and, Yes, and so she must have been extremely... Are you warm enough?
Yes, fine, yes.
She must have been... I'll make a cup of tea.
Made you feel at home?
Oh, absolutely, most hospitable, and oh yes, that was an absolute gift. You felt as if you were the honoured guests, and she couldn't do too much for you. Yes, very, very hospitable. I suppose she was quite a mixture of thoughtful, serious. Of a thoughtful, serious nature and a very outgoing one, because obviously she loved people. But incidentally, at the party given for Mrs. Despard, which was 90 years old, her 90th birthday, was at Anna's house. There may have been another meeting up in town, but the general garden party was at Anna's house, in the garden. I think her birthday must have been in July or August or something.
Yeah, about 1930 that would be.
Oh, was it?
That's sort of the entire, I think.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that would be, was that 1930?
Early 30s, anyway.
Yes, I think it would be. Yes.
What sort of went on there? You went to it?
I went to it, yes. Well, I suppose my mother and aunt did as well. We were invited. And I can't really remember very much of. I mean, there must have been very many, there must have been many people there. All the interesting old suffragettes must have been there.
Oh, yes, I think they were.
And I remember Mrs. Despard talking, and she was absolutely marvellous at 90. Yeah.
What, giving a performance?
Yes.
Interesting, yes. She's a remarkable woman.
Remarkable.
What about sort of help in the house? Did Anna have a lot of help? Big house.
Oh, yes, there was a, I can't remember her name, was it Dorothy? There was a house, oh yes, there was a, She wasn't a servant, she was a friend of the family in a way, or she became a friend of the family. I can't remember her name. Who was...
A housekeeper, really.
Yes, a kind of, I suppose she was a kind of housekeeper. And Sidney thought highly of her. And she, that's right, she doted on Sidney, this housekeeper. Sidney could do no wrong. Whereas I gather that Anna often did wrong. yes, another funny thing was that Margaret, as a child, spoke in very broad Berkshire dialect because she'd been, she played with all the local children. And I have an idea that this housekeeper woman also spoke in rather broad dialect, you see. Yes.
What about housekeeping, Jenny? Do you think she was fussy about the house, Anna, or particularly?
I don't know. That's a difficult one, really. It's true that the house was very well kept.
Was it? Yes.
They had some lovely furniture, and obviously they weren't short of money, so they had they had marvellous china and cutlery and silver and stuff. I can't really remember very much.
But if it was well kept, it would be well kept by the servants, I suppose. Wouldn't there be more than one servant, I suppose?
I didn't know about that. I suppose they did have somebody who would come in and do the Margaret would know, would probably say more than anyone would know all that side of it.
Yes.
I can't remember. I only remember seeing this housekeeper who was rather a bossy type. And I think that Anna and she didn't really see eye to eye. I think that was, I seem to remember, there were
not Dorothy Adams, was it? There was somebody who became a magistrate later who owed it entirely to Anna Munro, apparently. Maybe somebody else, I'm not sure. It was a nice place to go to, as you remember.
Oh, yes, delightful.
Yes, well, yes. That's also interesting. Well, what about dress? I mean, you say that her children were left to go barefoot. Did Anna herself dress in any unusual way, or was she quite normal in the way she dressed?
Obviously, as a young woman, she'd been very well dressed. I think as she got older, I would say that her dress was rather voluminous and perhaps a bit strange. I never get the impression that she took a lot of trouble over it.
No.
But she was very artistic.
Was she?
And loved attractive things in the house, and she had a great eye to. Yes, I mustn't forget this, because she really had a developed aesthetic sense. There's no doubt about that. And she was always very appreciative of anything that was beautiful.
Was she interested in your career, actually?
Oh, yes, well, she was, yes. When I got married, she gave me a beautiful little set of Chinese condiment set.
Donald said that she loved sales. She'd always go to a sale if she possibly could. And would then, sort of a lot of things she bought, she'd distribute as presents to everybody, right, left, and centre. And there'd be a terrific list of Christmas cards to be sent, that sort of thing. She obviously was quite a generous person.
Oh, very, very, very. years, and oh yes, presents always at Christmas. Yes. Oh yes, you would have a vast number of presents. Would you like a cup of tea?
Well, if you're having one, this is
who. Well, yes, until I retire. Yes, my mother went from place to place, and eventually retired. She went on until she was over 60. She died a few years ago. When she was about 86. I don't know how old Anna was when she died. About the same,
I think. I think she died in the early 60s, didn't she? 1960s, that is. So she must have been in her 70s, I should think.
No, I think she's older than that. She's the same age as my mother, and if my mother died in 69, yes, she'd probably be over 80. Yes, I think she'd be probably about 82 or so, and she'd have 80. She probably didn't have awfully good health at the end. I
don't think she did. I think that's right. I think there was quite a lot of trouble. Because Donald played me a record of her. She gave a talk for the BBC.
Strange way. In fact, we did wonder whether she had a little
stroke
or something. Yes. Because she seemed to have great difficulty in enunciating her words. Yes, and she was rather unsteady and still full of vitality, but yes, we felt that she wasn't at all well. My mother was with me because my mother was very fond of her as well, because my aunt had died some years before, but also 85.
So they weren't, your aunt and your mother weren't active really in the women's movement.
No.
Later on at all, really. They just did a job.
Yes, and that rather took all their time. My aunt, from after the war, she was in the Woolwich Arsenal for a time, and for a few years until it all petered out, you know, and the women went back to their very domestic chores, and the men came back from the front.
She was actually making munitions there, was she?
Well, she wasn't actually making them. She was a supervisor.
I see.
In her khaki uniform, which Lillian Bayliss had her. She was the big shot. And Lillian Barker, yes. Lillian Barker. And then she had these supervisors, of which my aunt was one, and they all had khaki suits. Very military, and and then my aunt took a job with Viro, for the last 20 years of her life, before she retired, she was a representative for Viro, and as a nurse, she visited other nurses and doctors. She used to go around the country just after talking about Viro to. Medical.
It's something one used to see on railway stations in viral advertisements for viral. You don't see it now, do you really?
No, but the other day I did see in a chemist shop I saw two jars of viral.
Did you really?
Yes,
I did. Must have brought your mother retired, what, sort of 65 or 60, did she, as a health
worker? What, about 62 or so, yeah. Of course, the last war made great inroads